This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. Neil Conan is on assignment. In the past few years, methamphetamine has emerged as the new scourge of our cities, suburbs, and counties. It's powerfully addictive and easily made. Newspapers have labeled meth use a widespread, fast-rising problem. Cover stories abound on meth madness, and governments have been fighting meth, have made fighting meth a priority. But a new study from the Sentencing Project paints a very different picture of the meth problem. Based on available statistics, the report claims that nationwide use of meth is rare and its use is not increasing. The Sentencing Project study claims that the media has made meth the new darling of drug reporting, sensationalizing a problem that is much paler than news reports would have us believe. Methamphetamine, is it an epidemic or a moral panic? We want to hear from you this hour. If you're in the treatment community or law enforcement community, tell us how meth is affecting your community. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. I'm joined in Studio 3A by Ryan King. He's a policy analyst at the Sentencing Project, a national nonprofit focusing on criminal justice policy issues. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So your report, it's not, you were looking at data that had been collected by others. You didn't do your own data collection. But what did you find when you looked at this data?
Well, essentially we found that there's a significant disconnect between what the media is reporting and what is the proverbial conventional wisdom about methamphetamine and what the data shows. And in a nutshell, looking at government data on use for both adults as well as high school students, treatment data, emergency room data, and positive testing for persons who have been arrested to get a sense of how it is in the criminal justice community, we saw that essentially methamphetamine is a very regionally based drug and that use rates have been stable over years, are declining nationally, and while there may be some pockets of high rates of methamphetamine use generally, it should be viewed more as a regional problem rather than a nationwide epidemic.
But certainly, I mean, you mentioned regional. I think San Diego and Portland, they seem to be having a problem with this drug. A, why there? But B, doesn't that mean it's a potential problem elsewhere?
Well, I think it's important to contextualize that problem. And one of the things we wanted to look at was overall general use rates in those areas. And we looked at arrestees because they're often sort of a bellwether for drug use. And we found that in some of the areas with very high rates of methamphetamine growth in the last 10 years or so, that in actuality there seemed to be a replacement effect. So basically what we're saying is as methamphetamine was rising, use of cocaine and some other drugs actually were declining. So that's not to downplay the impact of methamphetamine and not to downplay the fact that there's a serious policy issue to be considered, but the notion that it's bringing people in, that it's this widespread epidemic, I think has been largely overblown.
So why? I mean, if the data are so clearly not sustaining the belief that methamphetamine is growing dramatically, why are people saying it is?
Well, that's largely where the report focuses on the role of the media, and it's been particularly instructive to go back about 20 years ago or so and look at the way crack cocaine was portrayed in the media, and largely the same. The language, the media sort of frenzy is eerily similar, and essentially I think it makes good copy. Drug addictions, if you look back historically, from marijuana, heroin, cocaine, opium, all the way through to crack cocaine and now methamphetamine, we have seen cycles every couple of decades, the drug of the moment, and I think that's what we're seeing with methamphetamine right now.
Right, but when the media report on something like this, they tell human stories. They're clearly human stories about methamphetamine. Isn't it up to policymakers to make decisions about policy based on hard data and let the public, you know, feel bad or excited or happy or miserable, whatever they like, based on the media stories?
Sure. In an ideal world, policy decisions would be evidence-based. But in reality, we know the politicians respond to the public, and the media is sort of it sits in the middle of that relationship between policymakers and the public. And policymakers clearly are responding to the rhetoric of epidemics, the rhetoric of this widespread threat. And when you read media accounts time and time again, they follow a formula, frequently a single anecdotal story, which is set as a warning for future problems that are growing there, and all of them lack the empirical data, and they are completely disconnected from what we're talking about and what we see with the national data in this report.
Okay. Well, also with me in Studio 3A is Joe Dunn, Associate Legislative Director of NACO. Do we call it NACO?
NACO.
NACO. Okay. I guess you do. The National Association of Counties. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So much of the reporting about the rise in meth use has referred to NACO's surveys. Why did you do the survey, first of all, and what did you find?
Well, what we found was that a number of counties in the West and Midwest brought this issue of methamphetamine abuse to our attention. We wanted to bring that all together in a series of surveys that we've done. We've done four surveys looking at the criminal impact, the treatment side, public health, and then also on child welfare system. And what we found is, in comparison to the Sentencing Project's report, that methamphetamine crisis is real, that there's a crisis out there, there's an epidemic, and really the data shows that counties are dealing with the painful consequences of this, that we're not in the business of judging the media's response to this crisis, but what we can say is from very clear evidence that methamphetamine is affecting county governments in a very distinct and negative way, both socially and also financially.
Well, how so? Is it? What are the costs to counties?
For example, I'll take a small county, Pine County, Minnesota. We have data from them that they're spending over $1 million in methamphetamine abuse related services, predominantly the child welfare system. There's a number of thousands of children who are usually at meth labs because their parents are cooking methamphetamine, and those children are then taken out of the home and placed in foster care. Another one, for example, is Umatilla County, Oregon. Represents 2% of the total population of the state of Oregon, but accounted for 25% of meth lab seizures in 2004 alone. What we found was in our first survey of sheriffs, it was 500 sheriffs that responded, and they showed that methamphetamine is leading to a number of other crimes as well. 70% said that robberies and burglaries have increased because of meth use. 62% reported increases in domestic violence, identity theft, simple assaults. All these issues, property crime, all these issues are affecting crimes because of methamphetamine abuse.
But Ryan King says, okay, you can find pockets, you can find individual counties, but if you look nationwide, you see a different picture, and if policy is going to be set for the whole country, you set it based on, you know, the country, and then if there's a regional problem, you deal with it.
Well, I would say that it's our evidence disputes that, because nearly 60% of sheriffs across the country said that methamphetamine was their top drug threat facing them currently. So that is a nationwide survey. That's something that we can extrapolate into the entire country and really showcase the fact that meth is a problem, meth is a crisis, it's an epidemic facing counties and their residents.
All right. Well, that's the issue. How big a problem is meth? Obviously, it is a problem. I mean, we're not disagreeing that methamphetamine addiction is bad, but how big and what should we do about it? So let's take a call now. And go to Michelle in Pendleton, Oregon, is that?
Yes.
Oh, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
I am actually in Umatilla County, Oregon. I work in the mental health system, and my husband is a public defender. And I've read some of the commentary that's coming out, and it sounds like this new study is supporting that maybe meth is being overblown by the media. And kind of my perspective of that is that seems to be coming from a very urban standpoint. If you look strictly at numbers, population numbers, maybe the numbers of people using meth aren't, you know, as high as it has been for other drugs that have been more urban, you know, popular in urban areas. But the problem that we're encountering in rural areas is that it is overwhelming some of the rural counties, and there aren't the resources here to deal with it. I work in mental health. I see clients every day who are struggling with meth addiction, who aren't able to find treatment. Of course, my husband deals with clients in the criminal justice system who are committing crimes related to their meth behavior. And just the infrastructure isn't here to deal with the size of this problem. And I think that by saying the media is overblowing it is kind of doing a disservice to the rural counties that are struggling with this across the nation.
Interesting question. Let's ask Ryan King of the Sentencing Project what he makes of that.
I wouldn't argue one bit with the caller's perspective. I wouldn't argue with much of what NACO has said as well. I think we're all on the same page here. The danger is that when it becomes misportrayed and when policymakers are thinking about this as a national perspective, when federal money comes out and when there's initiatives that are put, the danger is that, and it's a danger for rural Oregon as well as it is for New York City, is that if policymakers are responding saying, we're going to funnel these hundreds of millions of dollars into treatment for methamphetamine, well, people in New York want to get that treatment money. It's not being aimed to the proper places. We need to contextualize and understand the local contours of drug markets. So for rural counties in Oregon where it's been demonstrated to have been a problem, we need to make sure there's money there for treatment and their available beds. But we don't want to be blanketing this notion of an epidemic and funneling that money also into New York City and Philadelphia, where there's been absolutely no demonstration of methamphetamine abuse at all. So I think we do agree on the same page. I just think it's a matter of where I see this danger of the media and policymakers going down a road where everybody may lose.
Michelle, thanks very much for your call.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Let's take another call from Andy in Morgantown, North Carolina. Welcome to the, or is it Morgantown, North Carolina?
Yeah, Morgantown.
Okay.
A town or a ton.
Okay, welcome to the program.
Oh, well, thank you. I just happened to flip over and listen to you guys. I lived in Seattle, Washington for about 6 years and got wrapped up in the whole methamphetamine thing for about 3 years. Pretty much steady for about 9 months, which is when I finally called my parents and said I need to get home, and happened to move to North Carolina, which is right south in the Watauga County, which is one of the biggest producers of meth in the country. And I work at a hardware store where you can buy everything you need to make meth, all the way down from the iodine to the, I don't want to guess, I shouldn't give ingredients.
No, don't give the recipe, but
It is such not a metropolitan thing or an urban thing. It's the small town that I live in North Carolina is just bombasted with meth producers, guys that come in all tweaked out to the hardware store trying to find something, you know, everything from the muriatic acid, the whole nine yards, to make it. I mean,
Andy, we have to take a break, but if you'd stay on the line, we can come back and continue this discussion if you don't mind. So we'll take a short break. We're talking about methamphetamine use this hour, trying to determine how bad the problem is. We're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. I'm Joe Palka. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palka in Washington. We're talking about meth this hour. Is it an epidemic or an epidemic of overreporting? My guests are Ryan King, policy analyst at the Sentencing Project, and Joe Dunn, legislative director at the National Association of Counties. You're invited to join the discussion. If you're in the treatment community or law enforcement community, tell us how meth is affecting you. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email is talk@npr.org. And just before the break, we were hearing from Andy about the ease of availability of the ingredients. And the question is, what you know, in a hardware store, what are you going to do, put these things behind the counter?
Well, what we do is, some of the stuff like muriatic acid, our contractors come in to use it to clean their concrete.
Uh-huh.
But the Burke County has done a phenomenal job. The Burke County Task Force has given us a list, and when somebody comes in and buys muriatic acid, brake fluid, and, Red Devil Y, then we get their license plate number, we call them, and, you know, they chase down these people. They go to their house because obviously these guys are doing something other than cleaning concrete. They're not contractors.
Okay.
In this area, the Burke County Task Force is overwhelmed with producers. I mean, there's 10 busts every month in this area, and it's the backwoods. It's not an urban problem. It's the little small towns where people are bored.
Okay.
And in my area, it truly is an epidemic.
All right. Andy, thanks very much for the call. Joe Dunn, that more or less squares with what you're arguing, but there is one thing that has changed in recent years that makes it a little bit harder to make methamphetamine, right?
Yes. Many states, 35 states across the country, have passed legislation to restrict the sale of pseudoephedrine. So when you walk into any pharmacy, drugstore, hardware store, anything like that that would sell pseudoephedrine, you have to now sign for it in many states. You have to show a photo ID, things like that. And then recently, in March 2006, the Congress passed the Combat Meth Epidemic Act that did many of the same things on the national scale. One thing I would say about the caller is it is predominantly a rural drug, but it has moved to suburban and urban areas, especially in the gay population in urban cities like New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. here. It's been a major problem. It's led to an increase in HIV and hepatitis C admissions or infections. And then one last point that I would make is that to Mr. King's point about this massive federal funding that's going out there, and there's, you know, local governments and local law enforcement are going after this. Really, that is not the case. The local law enforcement programs have been cut by the administration in the budget each year for the last 3 years. They've zeroed out a key program, the Justice Assistance Grant Program. So really, locals are burdening more of a share of these costs because of that. So,
okay. Well, let's take another call now, this time from Bruce in Cleveland. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm not sure that the NACO representative correctly interpreted the data of the 500 sheriffs which responded to the his poll, because you have to determine how many of these sheriffs are urban and how many of these sheriffs are rural in order to extrapolate the data over the entire United States.
So what was this poll attempting to determine?
He said that his poll of 500 sheriffs determined that this was the largest problem in the United States in terms of drug use abuse.
Well, maybe we can ask then what was the regional distribution of these sheriffs?
Well, it was a wide breakdown. We had counties from everything above 500,000 population to below 10,000 population. In any survey that we do, there are, out of the 3,066 counties, there's 2,187 that are considered rural by the federal government. So you're going to have quite a bit of rural counties as well. But we did make it statistically relevant so that we, based it off of all population, not just only rural and suburban areas.
Okay.
Thanks. Other point, sir?
Yeah, go ahead, Bruce.
He's indicated that in Oregon, the smallest county, a county with 2% of the population, had 25% of the meth busts. Well, of course, that's where the meth makers are going to set up. They want to be rural and isolated from everybody else.
So
I would say, though, that the largest county in Oregon, Multnomah County, which is the greater Portland area, has a significant meth population as well. So it's not just, as the caller suggests, a rural problem. In the West, it's nearly every part of the state. In the Midwest, the same way. Des Moines has a problem just as much as a small county in the state of Iowa. So it is really being an epidemic across the country.
All right, Bruce, thanks very much for the call. Joe Dunn, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Joe Dunn is the Associate Legislative Director of the National Association of Counties. He joined us in Studio 3A. And now we're going to turn to Dr. Wesley Clark. He's the Director of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's Center for Substance Abuse Treatment. He joins me by phone from his office in Rockville, Maryland. Dr. Clark, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having us.
Now you've read Ryan King's report about his conclusion that the problem of meth is being overstated, at least on a national level. Perhaps there are pockets. What do you make of that?
Well, Mr. King's document's a nice essay. But I think, as others have pointed out, Joe Dunn and some of your other callers, that it focuses on our data. He uses substance abuse mental services data and then the National Institute of Drug Abuse data to paint a national picture. The problem with the national picture is that it dilutes some of the effect. Our epidemiologic data shows that methamphetamine is a substantial problem across the country. Our treatment episode data shows that it's a substantial problem across the country, and it has been growing since 1992. And even when you look at the arrestee data, some 18 out of the 39 sites report positive methamphetamine for arrestees at a greater than 10%. And in some jurisdictions, you had a gentleman talking about Portland, Oregon, 25.4% of the arrestees were positive for methamphetamine. And I think the key issue is, the question is, at what point does a problem become a concern for the nation? When it affects a large number of states, it should be a concern for the nation, and methamphetamine currently affects a large number of states. When we look at our emissions data of 83 per 100,000, we've got over half the states with methamphetamine problems. So,
Ryan King now. I looked at the data that you presented, and it seems to show a slightly different picture than Dr. Clark is suggesting.
Well, I wanted to. There's a few points that Dr. Clark made up. Brought up, and one of them, the treatment episode. The numbers that we've seen there are largely driven, I think, by criminal justice. So when we see an increase in treatment episodes, it's largely driven by more people being brought into the criminal justice system, which is not necessarily the most accurate reflection or indicator of people coming into treatment or the development of a problem, but maybe more reflective of the way that the criminal justice system is responding to the drug use. And I think also, once again, I think that Dr. Clark and I are on the same page about the fact that this is regional. I mean, we document quite extensively the arrestee data and show that in many pockets of areas it is high rates, but it still remains nationally far below all other drugs, both for use rates as well as even amongst arrestees. And so I think it's important, once again, to understand these local contexts, because when there is a pool of resources that's going to be put out for treatment, for enforcement, what have you, we need to make sure that it's being targeted for the right substances in the right regions. And I think that this data indicates that this idea of this nationwide epidemic of methamphetamine has really largely been the myth of the media rather than a fact supported by the data.
Dr. Clark?
I'd like to point out that on June 1st, Mr. Walters, the director of the National Drug Control Policy, Alberto Gonzalez, the attorney general, and Michael Levitt, the secretary for Health and Human Services, signed a synthetic drug control strategy document and published that for public consumption. And one of the first things it states is support state drug control strategies, which means that rather than driving this from a national Washington, D.C. perspective, our job is to help states deal with their issues. And that would speak to then Mr. King's concern about regional variations. Our job is also to identify and share best practices, to expand drug endangered children's programs. Joe Dunn mentioned that. Mr. King's document doesn't deal with the issue of drug endangered children adequately. Our job is to support treatment and prevention programs, to improve reporting data on meth labs, to also deal with the issue of the international component of meth labs, to deal with the toxic aspect of meth labs in terms of cleanup and prevention, and to expand methamphetamine toxicity knowledge base. So I think those are appropriate roles for the federal government, working in conjunction with local governments, cities, counties, and also tribes, because indeed that's another thing that Mr. King's document doesn't deal with. We've just recently met with a number of tribes and regional meetings, and they all say, especially on reservations, that methamphetamine production and consumption are problems for them, and they are asking the federal government for assistance, both in terms of knowledge about methamphetamine and in terms of resources. So we don't really disagree. I think what we're getting involved in is the semantics of how bad of does a problem have to get before you label it, an epidemic or something else.
Right.
The issue is that it's widespread, it involves multiple jurisdictions, it involves multiple peoples, it involves multiple ethnic groups, multiple economic levels. So at some point you might say that's an appropriate role for the federal government to work in partnership with states, cities, counties, and tribes.
Okay, Doctor.
But Dr. Clark, would you agree? I think particularly you've mentioned the treatment issue. The media has grossly misportrayed the receptivity of methamphetamine to treatment. I think that's been one of the great disservices, has been this notion of this one hit and you're done, one hit and you're hooked kind of portrayal.
And it occurs to me that one of our callers earlier had been addicted and now was better and working in a job in North Carolina.
Right, and so we did a survey of some of the research, both state-based as well as institutional, looking at success rates. And what we found in the study, and correct me if you disagree, Dr. Clark, is that methamphetamine treatment is essentially on par with other drugs. I mean, none of them are perfect, but it's certainly not any less receptive to treatment than any of the other substances that are out there.
I found your essay very positive on that way, on the treatment and prevention, because indeed we need to, I agree with you, hope is found in treatment as well as in prevention. So,
okay.
In fact, the synthetic drug control strategy focuses on treatment and prevention as a part of a larger, more comprehensive strategy,
strong on
law enforcement, strong on public health.
I'd like to bring in some callers now. Megan in San Francisco, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I am a emergency psychiatrist in the San Francisco area, and so when a psychotic patient comes into the emergency room, it's my job to figure out if they have a mental illness or if they're under the influence of some type of drug. I would say that on an average, more than one patient a night is under the influence of methamphetamine. So I certainly live and work in the middle of one of these regional pockets that your first guest was talking about. But one thing that I notice is never mentioned is that some of these patients who have taken meth once, twice, only a few times, although I agree with the comment that treatment, it works and is certainly the best resource for them, many of these patients remain psychotic. They don't get better. They stop being high after 36 hours or so, but they stay psychotic for days, for weeks, sometimes even years. And this is a small but significant number of patients. So while I certainly support the use of these statistics to funnel more resources our way, I certainly hope that happens, I don't think we can possibly overestimate the danger of this drug and the possibility that it can sweep across the nation and become an epidemic. It is incredibly addictive. And the potential drain on public health resources is very hard for me to imagine. It's huge.
Right.
And I notice that nobody speaks about that, the lasting power and the lasting problems that meth addiction can cause.
Megan, thanks for your call. We're talking about methamphetamine and it's the size of the problem it represents to the country. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. So, Ryan King, what do you make of that issue?
That the caller brought
right,
up?
Right, yes.
Sure. I think with all of these that for the callers as well as the guests here, I think we're all on the same page. I think that what this report attempts to do, and I urge listeners to really look into it, is to look at the way it's been portrayed in the media. So much of what these callers are sharing are real experiences, and they illustrate real challenges. But the danger, again, I'm returning to, is the idea that if the misportrayal of methamphetamine, the mislabeling of it as an epidemic, and this may be a semantic issue as Dr. Clark raised, has real tangible policy consequences. And largely what those look like is that when we're coming to a point where federal resources are being committed and they're going to be directed to certain areas, the danger is that if methamphetamine becomes the entire focus, that in Philadelphia or New York City, where cocaine or heroin are facing greater challenges, they may be facing resource shortfalls. So I want the caller to have the resources available where she is working in San Francisco, but her counterpart in Boston or New York should have those same resources available if the substance happens to be heroin or cocaine, which is not the quote-unquote substance of the moment.
Well, let's take another call now from Alex in Sacramento. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good.
Well, listen, I'm calling, I'm a former meth user, and I've been listening to the conversation a bit, and I don't know, a couple things come to mind, particularly in terms of, science. It seems like it's kind of self-defeating to use, poorly constructed statistical studies for some sort of political end. I don't necessarily believe that it is epidemic. As I say, as a former user, there are probably, hundreds of other substances, of hundreds of other things to be much more concerned about, particularly, with a substance like cocaine, which does seem to be on the rise.
Yeah. Alex, it's an interesting point. Can I ask Dr. Clark to respond to it? Because Dr. Clark gathers data, but then somebody,
sure,
his agency and others have to set policy. So what do we do here, Dr. Clark?
Well, I think, again, our point is we work with states, cities, counties, and tribes to address the issue from their perspective. The gentleman raised the issue of cocaine being on the rise. Actually, that's not the case nationally. When you look at, let's pluck Des Moines, Iowa out of the hat, in looking at arrestee data, 12% of those who presented, who were arrested, had cocaine on board, and 28% had methamphetamine on board. When you went to Phoenix, Arizona, it's 23% with cocaine on board, methamphetamine is 38%. So, again, our strategy is to work with states, cities, counties, and tribes to deal with issues. And our funding is actually targeted to, we have block grant funding going to the states, then we have discretionary funds which jurisdictions apply for, and they prioritize their problem and their epidemiology so that they can fund treatment. The president most recently had asked for funds for access to recovery, which is a voucher initiative that would allow a full continuum of services to be provided, including, as Ryan King points out in his paper, extended aftercare through our recovery support services so that local communities can, one, prioritize their problem as they see fit, and two, extend the reach by bringing in community providers, recovery oriented providers, and faith providers.
Dr. Clark, we have to leave it there. Dr. Wesley Clark is director of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's Center for Substance Abuse Treatment. We're talking about methamphetamine, and we'll be talking later about Flag Day. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In a few minutes, the flag as art on Flag Day. But first, we're talking about the meth problem. With us is Ryan King. He's the author of the report, The Next Big Thing, Methamphetamine in the USA. He's a policy analyst at the Sentencing Project. And joining me now is Maya Solovitz. Drug reporting has always been a source of controversy, and the debate over the scope of the meth problem in the press is nothing new. Maya Solovitz is a drug policy expert and senior fellow at the media watchdog group Stats, which watches the use of science and statistics in the press. She joins us from Fire Island, New York. Welcome.
Thank you.
So there is this idea that methamphetamine is sweeping the country, we've been talking about, in ways unprecedented in the war against drugs. How would you demonstrate that? How would you demonstrate statistically that the meth mania was exaggerated?
Well, if you just look at the report that we've been discussing so far, it brings together all of the data in a very fresh and positive way. The National Survey on Drug Use and Health has never shown a major methamphetamine problem. The emergency room study called Dawn doesn't show it. We just don't see it in the numbers.
So you think that the media has exaggerated?
It absolutely has. And if you look at, for example, that big Newsweek cover story a while back, it didn't really even cite any numbers at all.
Really? So you think that most of the concern has come from reporting by anecdote, as it were?
Absolutely. That's exactly what's happened. They find one extreme case and then try to scare everybody that this is what's going to happen to your children next.
So when the head of the substance abuse treatment one of the parts of the Substance Abuse Treatment Administration says we need a policy and we need a plan and the government sets one up and all that, are they responding to a non-existent problem?
It's not a non-existent problem. It's just that we seem to focus on the trend of the month instead of recognizing that there are a small group of people who are prone to have serious problems with drugs. And they will always exist, and we need to make policy in relation to dealing with their health, not in relation to the trendy drug of the moment.
Okay. Well, let's take a call about this and go to Lloyd in Redding, California. Lloyd in Redding, California, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a ER physician in Redding, California. It's a rural area. I have a lot of colleagues in other areas who also see methamphetamine as a major problem, both psychiatric medical clearance, and then just patients with medical problems related. I believe both of your speakers are probably correct. The data probably shows that there's not a major methamphetamine problem. However, marijuana, for instance, according to their data, would probably show that there is a major problem. But yet, marijuana does not cause major resources and problems in rural communities and cities. While methamphetamine, as the lady from San Francisco pointed out earlier, you can have problems for weeks, months, even years after meth use. So the cost to our society is just draining our system. So even though the absolute numbers are not there for meth, the problems and the costs for society are overwhelming.
The people who get into trouble with meth,
Maya
however...
Solovitz. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Maya Solovitz.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, the people who get in trouble with meth are the same people who would have a few years back got in trouble with crack. Those people are people who tend to have previous histories of trauma, perhaps a genetic predisposition, all manner of serious... Most normal people do not fall in love with a substance such that it will take over their lives and they will wind up in an emergency room. It does happen that an occasional happy person makes a mistake, but the people who you're seeing over and over and over again in emergency rooms, at least half of them and probably more, have another coexisting mental illness. And that's what we need to be dealing with. It's not so much the substance, but the sort of thing that predisposes the people to have the problem with the substance.
Lloyd, thanks for that call. Ryan King, I want to ask you, you know, you wrote this report, and Maya Salovitz thinks that it's a fairly accurate representation of the scope of the problem. Why the Sentencing Project is interested in this? I didn't quite understand that.
There's a couple of reasons. One that I've raised earlier, which is that I'm afraid that it's going to lead to a misallocation of resources by really misportraying what drug use in the United States is like. So that's one. And then two, I think from a sentencing perspective, we have very closely watched crack cocaine sentencing and the impact of the epidemic mythology around crack cocaine in the mid-1980s. And this was a lot of the same language, same patterns that we saw in the 1980s. We're seeing right now with methamphetamine. Now, the result of that, the very direct result of that media coverage and that epidemic mythology was the passage of the Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1986, which included extremely punitive sentencing provisions for crack cocaine. Since that, in the intervening 20 years, many of the major players that were involved, as well as the United States Sentencing Commission, have realized the error of those crack cocaine sentencing laws. But the fact of the matter is that they have been ingrained, they still exist, and despite more than a decade's worth of efforts of reform, including the Sentencing Commission calling for the reform of these crack cocaine sentencing laws, they still exist, and they're still having detrimental consequences, predominantly in the African-American community, and that you can tie directly back to the media portrayal. So when we saw a lot of these same patterns developing now with methamphetamine that we had seen 20 years ago with crack cocaine, we really felt it was important to illustrate that and bring it about before we follow that same pathway.
Okay, I think we're going to have to leave things there. Ryan King, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ryan King is a policy analyst at the Sentencing Project, and he's written a report of about methamphetamine called The Next Big Thing, Methamphetamine in the United States. And we also, on the line, and thank you very much, is Maya Salovitz. She's a senior fellow at the media watchdog group Stats. Thank you.
Thank you very much.